It's Caulfield and Company, live on location.
What? Just don't even touch it, buddy.
Love that trash can right now.
Dame time is here. It's time.
Whoa!
It's time for Caulfield and Company with Steve Caulfield on ESPN Las Vegas.
See, first of all, I know these so-called players wouldn't tell you this, but I'ma be real and say what's on my heart.
All right, 5 o'clock hours here. Valentine's week. Oh, the garden, it's lighting up.
Ready for our stroll?
I'm not going with you. Angel said he's going to walk with you hand in hand.
Okay.
He'll commit to you for the next year. I'm not so sure. We might be breaking up at the end.
Not looking for a year.
Yeah.
Just for tonight.
Ethel M. Chocolates, Henderson on this Monday. You got all week now. We're telling you. Get down here. Buy your goodies. Chocolate dipped strawberries. Get those XO cognac truffles. So many cool things. You can eat the Vegas Golden Knights themed chocolates. You can collect them.
It's like a legit puck.
It's a legit
chocolate
puck. It's
the size and weight, but it's in chocolate of a puck.
It's one of those things you would – I almost feel horrible just taking a big hunk out of it. It's beautiful looking.
I think you should.
Yes.
We should do it on the live stream.
Yes. Just try to swallow the whole thing.
No. Just take a huge, like a big bite out of like the corner. But all the way through the whole thing, though.
I think I'm going to go something not as chocolatey.
Not as chocolatey as the giant puck?
Yeah.
Okay.
I might go for some caramel.
Thank you for putting the A in. I appreciate
it. Actually, I didn't that time.
Caramel.
Caramel. Okay. Caramel. All right, Big Five time.
Battle Born Injury Lawyers presents the Big Five at Five. Number five.
I think it's pretty clear to the audience I don't like Ari.
Who does?
He runs the show. Angel doesn't like him. He's annoyed by him all the time. But one of the things that drives me nuts, the most nuts about him, is how picky he is with food. It really irks me. Because I'll buy food for the studio, and he's like, I don't eat that. Like, What do you eat?
Nobody knows.
He's 140 pounds. I embarrassed him last week. I'm like, you're 100. He is the example of male skinny fat.
God, I wish I was 140 pounds.
What are you, 160?
Yeah, I'm getting close to that, thanks to being on this show.
There you go, 160. I'm 160. He's almost 160.
I stress eat, Steve.
I clowned him yesterday. In spite of my ginormous belly and just aging, broken down body, I was like, touch your toes right now. And he's like, I can't do it. And I'm like, here you go. My palms are on the floor.
Unreal.
But I feel like that's because you have short legs.
It's because I'm deep down, I'm just a great athlete.
I don't think that's
all about flexibility.
I don't think that's the case.
I think part of it is short legs. I think...
You're all torso.
I am all torso. If I went to the combine... At 5'9", my wingspan is 84 inches.
That's impressive.
I would lose, but I could at least hold a hand out and potentially keep John Jones at a distance. And he's 6'4".
I doubt it. Okay. I feel like he'd find his way inside.
I can still touch my toes, so that's an impressive feat. Impressive. But Ari's annoying with food. I brought in the Popeye's chicken a couple of weeks ago, and he's like, mayonnaise, breaded, spices, I can't do it. Bring in a pepperoni pizza, pepperoni, cured meat, can't do it.
Yeah.
So I know that this one's going to be a disaster.
Never mind.
What?
Was that a religious thing? Like, I don't think we can criticize that.
I know, but you have to be that hardcore. You get older. You start eating all the cured meats.
Fine.
Come on. Let's go. Get in the pork world. Dig on some swine. He sends over a post that says, best part of the chicken to eat. And he says, if you guys say wing over breast, I'm quitting. All right. Well,
you know what?
Enjoy this Big Five.
I don't agree, but I'm just going to say it to get him to quit. Can we do that?
Oh, you'd love that. Right now,
Put him to the test.
See you later.
Yeah. If you want to mark this, I'm not 100% sold on the breast.
I'm just going to let that sit.
Yeah, we just marked that. Now, this is interesting. Can you tweet this out? They actually have the chicken broken down. They've got thigh, drumstick. Then they've got flat, which is the wing, right?
It's a certain kind of wing.
Is it the upper? It's the upper gun of the wing?
Yeah.
Right?
There's a drumstick wing and a flat wing.
Then they've got breast, and this is not a part of the chicken. Then they've got a little line drawn to finger. The chicken finger.
The finger is not an actual. It's not an actual part of the chicken.
It looks like it's the upper breast.
No, if that's
on
a choice,
chicken diagram.
If that's a choice, I'm going finger.
Yeah, we're both fingers.
Like chicken fingers are the greatest thing that's ever been invented.
Sorry, Ari, you're out.
Okay, wait a minute. I love chicken fingers. I didn't know that was an option.
It's on the graphic.
That's awful.
It's your story.
He just sends over links blindly.
You sent the graphic. It's part of the graphic. Did you not read it?
I must have missed that part in all the confusion of what I do and all the eating.
What confusion?
I still do like breasts, though. Like, over, I think.
Okay.
I think we're really going to go there.
Yeah, you do.
FCC. Very nice job. I'm going to rank it as drumstick 1, finger 2, breast 3, thigh 4, flat 5. But, I mean, if you give me all flats, of course I'm going to eat them.
Yeah, I mean, finger 1, I mean, there's not even a, I don't think there's a debate on that.
But you're too snobby to go non-white meat, huh?
Me?
No. Ari?
Yeah.
I prefer
racist.
White meat, but I will indulge in some dark meat as well.
Is that right?
Oh, wow.
You might want to isolate that one, too.
Mm-hmm.
it's finger, breast, then I guess flat.
But let's be honest.
I'm anti-drumstick.
The whole thing. Are you?
Oh, yeah.
That right?
I've talked like we. Yeah.
You don't do the drums
things.
When you eat wings.
I
you go flats
like,
over
I'm
the drums.
I'm thinking more like the giant drumstick.
Yeah, I love those.
I'm out.
I mean, it's a lot of work as compared to the breast. If you're real lazy,
yeah.
Here,
I feel like there's more options in preparation.
I hate doing our chicken breakdowns all the time because Big Chicken gets us to talk about these things every week. Big Chicken, like Big Tobacco, gets us every week.
Yeah,
I feel like. The breast of the chicken world are so much more enhanced from a drug standpoint.
Oh, 100%.
Like, I don't think they're building up the legs with the drugs. Like, you don't see chickens at the factories or the coops or wherever the hell they are, whatever.
Well, if
you don't
want
see
to
them
that.
With, like, these, you know, giant freaking power thighs. All the drugs, they pump right into the breast.
I don't think
that's why we're all fat.
But I feel like that you wouldn't
these fat drugged up chickens.
I feel like it would take a lot before you saw the giant like jacked up thighs on a chicken. I feel like they probably do it. You just don't notice it because you're not seeing chickens like walking around or just you know sprinting.
No, they're not sprinting.
No,
especially the ones that are
right.
But
I think that's why
because
I feel like they might have that if they allowed them to move ever. But they're just locked up in a coop all the time. They don't get the chance to flex their. Thighs and make them giant.
They're pretty sedentary. They're not doing squats. Number 4.
Number 4.
Back to the Oscars. Hashtag stick to sports. We loved it. We watched it. There's probably 4 more days of Oscars material. I did not like your tweet last night. I thought it was very insensitive. You need to apologize.
I don't.
Joaquin Phoenix and I'll throw in Renee Zellweger and they both won awards. Best actor and actress. They're unique people.
Well, I feel
you don't have to call them weirdos because they're very exotic, appearing to be out there. I think that's the artist. That's you as a radio guy.
That's
fine. You as a normal person. You're kooky.
I am
so why would you hate
awkward.
Him? Why would you throw a line out there like I don't really think Joaquin Phoenix is acting.
I don't.
Like this is him all the time.
I think his role as the Joker is one of the greatest performances I've ever seen until I saw his speech last night and I was like, it's just him. He's just the Joker in real life. It's very weird. Now, of course, I'm kidding. There's a difference between being a homicidal maniac and just being a little eccentric and kooky like he was last night. His rant about milk, I'm kind of with him, but I don't. It was so out there and bizarre that I can't even figure out where he was going.
That stung a little bit because I'm a big milk guy.
So did you not have milk today because of it?
No, I had a full glass.
I saw a lot of people like, that felt weird drinking milk today.
I drink zero. I drink 0%. I think that's a good milk.
Okay.
No, I think his whole point was we're making these poor cows miserable by draining all the milk out of them.
I get it, but I would kind of be with the message, but it was like, it was so weird how he got there with the message. And then he actually had a very touching tribute to his brother, but you're like, wait, is this milk still? Like, I don't know where he's going with this. The whole thing was so weird.
I'll be honest, I was at a bar. I don't have to be honest. I was at a bar listening to that speech, and I was like, I got to politicize this. And I just screamed out. I was like, F animals. And everyone looked. They're like, yeah, I guess that is a partisan topic. You're right.
It's not. It kind of is.
Oh, no.
Oh, it kind of is. Believe me, one side was much more angry about it than the other. There's no question about that.
But you get my point. Like, you're just screaming out, screw cows.
But I also I can't believe you're putting Renee Zellweger in the same category
as
that lunatic.
You got to watch her in interviews. And
sure, but last night she was fine.
She's in a freaking zone.
Can we agree that
Here's the thing. You got to watch that movie. I haven't seen it. I'm a weirdo. I think I talked about it 6 months ago. For some reason, I was going around YouTube, like the kids do, just looking up different things. And I was like, oh, Judy Garland, two-part interview with, like, some, I don't know, Barbara Walters back in, like, 1968. And she is a lunatic.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, I think that was for drugs.
Yes.
Okay.
And that was
okay.
That's what the movie's about, is how, like, Judy Garland just, I mean, it was also the fame, though.
Sure.
Like, yeah, and that's it's sort of the reason why people, like, celebrities in a way used to be protected. Like, Judy Garland today, like, she would get just killed on social media.
Of course. Yeah, that's changed a lot. And all the, you know,
being
a network has kind of changed that,
she
too.
She also may have been mentally ill, which would be another angle.
Fair. And going back, like, I just don't think that
they
were on the same
level.
I
got you off
last night.
Phoenix Zelliger. Yes,
because they weren't the same last night. Renee Zellweger was, like, kind of normal.
Yeah.
I thought her speech was fine, and I get it. Like, I've seen interviews with her too, where she's kind of out there. That was fine to me. But the Joaquin Phoenix was just so, because I understand mental illness. People are like, oh, it's just, that's a mental illness. That's not, like, I get it. Like, there's a difference.
Yeah, I don't know if those moments are, but when I watch him, I also think of how you interact with people sometimes.
Oh, that's the other thing. Like, yeah. I felt like I related. I was like, man, his awkwardness, because he can go on camera or, like, on a microphone somewhere and, like, deliver a performance. Like, I feel like I kind of can at times. I am so weird and out there and bizarre when I'm not around here, not on the air, and you've seen that, like, you know, I get it. I relate to that on some level of how, like, everybody was just kind of looking at him like, what are you talking about? Like, I have that all day, every day in my real life. That's how I am. So I get it on that level, but I don't think there was a comparison between Zellweger and Joaquin Phoenix last night.
Top three stories.
Number three.
Who's this cat? Zadarius Smith?
Yes.
You're not a big fan of
Sackmaster.
You're not a big fan of the Packer Sackmaster.
I was until today.
He was caught by TMZ, and they started asking him questions about Aaron Rodgers and Danica Patrick.
Now, should he marry Danica? Is she the one?
Yes, she is.
Marry Danica Patrick?
Yes. If the look 12, I know I'm on TMZ. I'm in Miami. But, man, most definitely, you should marry that, like, marry her.
Do you think being a married quarterback can elevate your game?
I feel like, man, women are bringing the best out of a man, you know? As men, you know, as strong as we are, women bring the best out of us.
Women bring the best out of us, especially quarterbacks.
That's a nice theme for Valentine's Day and being out here.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. All good. And I agree with normal guys. Like, normal people have a regular job. Or, like, yes, you can make that argument. For athletes or people that are on just a different level, that where you have to be laser focused 24 hours a day.
You think everyone should be Jeter? Wait until you're however long your career is. Wait until you're like 40 something, late 30s, and you get married.
Yes, especially like a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. He should be all the time film, looking at plays, breaking down things, analyzing.
This is
24 hours a day.
This is one of Adam Hill's consistently. I think it's a great take, but it's controversial, especially Valentine's week.
That's fine.
Work ethic when you're married versus work ethic when you're single.
It's such a different world, and we see it. How many? Not only here in the journalism business, everywhere. We see it in our field. How many times are you like, oh man, like I broke down, you know, seven games this weekend. It was crazy. I was all over the place. And I like you talk to a guy like, I didn't see any games this week. I took the kids to the park. Like, good for you. That's great. But you're not doing your job properly now. That is, we've talked about this time and time again over the years.
Adam Hill pushing for everyone at the RJ who is married to be fired.
Not fired.
Is that your official stance?
Not fired. You just, there is a time. And listen.
You can't match my
that
work
choice,
ethic. That's what you're saying.
That choice is fine. I'm 100% okay with that decision of, hey, I'm going to get married, have kids, be a family man. And I think at that point, you should be spending time with your family and not being a lunatic about work. You should. And that's a perfectly legitimate thing to do. But you can't make the argument that you're working just as hard as people that aren't in that position. You can't, because you're not. Because you have responsibility. And if you are, if you're working as hard as people that are not in that position, then you're probably a terrible husband and father.
Damn. Harsh reality.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get down with Danica Patrick and Aaron Rodgers.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
You can't be.
No, I really am.
That's impossible.
I think they're a good match.
All right, well, his career is going to plummet if they get married. But go ahead. What is your argument on that?
I was reading a story last week about them hanging out often, right? They're good. They're good travel buddies. So they were hanging out at whatever the golf tournament was last week. Were they in? Oh, whatever, golf tournament. They were hanging out. She said, we're good travel buddies. We both want to do the same things. We want to go to the same places. We want to have similar experiences. We want to see the same stuff. See? There you go.
Wonderful.
They have a lot in common.
Sure they do.
It's one of the things that we connected on very early when we started talking. Travel and wanting to travel. And that no matter what, that was going to happen for us in our lives.
And then we
came to find out we're very good travel partners. And then I think she took a shot at Aaron Rodgers saying that, well, some people are really late all the time or they take forever to get ready.
So him.
Or maybe Aaron Rodgers takes
a long time to get ready.
Possibly.
Shocker. I would also say that there's nothing I love more than like a couple or two people are like, oh, what do you guys like to do? Oh, we like to travel. Who doesn't?
Some people don't.
That's completely wrong.
There's travel partners in terms of where you like to go. Everybody likes to travel somewhere and do something, and go explore. It's what you do when you travel.
That's different.
Are you a morning person or are you nighttime person?
Sure, I'm with you.
I'm a nighttime person, of course. Exactly. So
if you're
with someone who wants to get up at 7 a.m. every day and go, you know, walk and tour and ride horses, you're going to be like, I'm out, or look at trees or scenery, or watch bands and drums.
But that's a good example.
Those are all things you hate.
That's a good example. What did they say? What did she say? Oh, we like to travel. Yes, everyone does.
She said they like the same things.
That first thing was, you know, we both like to travel, we both like to explore. Yeah, everyone does. It's not even just with them. You hear it all the time. I want to find somebody who likes to travel.
Adam, I'm telling everyone. You, on Instagram especially, when I see couples out traveling and I see certain pictures and things they're at, I'm like, absolutely not. That would not be a match for me at all.
Sure.
Now,
but that's different. That's
a lot of it comes down to I look at it and I'm like, I don't like that person. But a lot of times it's the events and I'm like, I'm not doing that. I need to be up at 2 a.m, you know, basically passing out drunk somewhere.
Fine. And that's great. But it's also
not walking at 7 a.m. up a hill in Hawaii or whatever.
Right. But the general concept.
Not snorkeling.
The general concept of we both like to travel is just a universal concept. But you're right. Everybody has different ways they want to travel and how they want to do it when they get there. Fine. Those are different things that you could actually point out. But I've always hated the general, we both like to travel. Yes, you and everyone else on the planet, except for like 10 people.
Top two stories.
Number two.
This is a nightmare with the Lakers. I don't mean they're like doomed, but they did nothing at the trade deadline. And now they're
begging for people to come out of retirement.
Like Darren Collison, can you come out of retirement? He's like, no.
I'm good.
By the way, what an indictment it is on the Lakers that Collison's like, championship? I don't think so with you guys. Is that what he was saying, or he's just done playing basketball?
He just said the timing isn't right for him, which maybe means he's not in shape. I don't know. That could potentially be it. I think you're right to look at it and say you're extending an offer to a guy to come out of retirement, make some money, maybe win a championship in what could be one of the most emotional seasons in the history of sports. And you're like, nah, I'm good.
Sat courtside with Genie and still was not convinced. And now the Plan B is Dion Waiters. Can we just stop now? Plan C is J.R. Smith.
By the way,
what is happening here?
But didn't – well, first of all, J.R. Smith is just a LeBron decision.
Which is outrageous.
Someone's
got to step in. It's one of the greatest memes ever with LeBron at midcourt like, what are you doing?
But it says,
why? And then now, like 2 years later, he's like, yeah, come on, J.R. Smith.
It says a lot about J.R. that, you know, LeBron is still like, I kind of like that guy still. He's still all right, even though he messed up that one play. So, they are in a position now where they whiffed at the deadline. Or they just didn't see anything that made sense for them, and now they're looking at the next level of guys that just don't have a job.
We can get this guy for free. Dion Waiters.
This is great.
Don't get him for free.
Dion Waiters, just by the way, his buyout was like $30 million. Like, this is a guy who, like, 2 months ago was thriving. He has one overdose on gummies on a plane, and now he's just getting paid $30 million to do nothing. That's quite a way to get out of the league. It's impressive. I like it. But now he might even get rewarded by going to the Lakers.
Top story.
Number one.
Yeah, we talk about media and reports and sources all the time. This is why you got to be very careful. Michael Irvin went on WEEI in Boston. Tom Brady time. We have Tom Brady talk every day. He's coming to the Raiders, right? Free agency opening up right in the middle of March. So TB12 is a conversation all over the country, especially in Boston. This was Michael Irvin talking about discussions around the Cowboys trading Dak Prescott and bringing in Tom Brady as their QB.
Well, I can tell you something on that because I'm just telling you right now. At that Super Bowl in Miami, some very significant people and I had some conversations leaning in that same direction, and it was shocking. I mean, I had a I had a vodka cranberry in my head, and when they said it to me, I put the drink down and said, let's talk a little bit more about this right here. You know, I had a conversation with people, I can't tell you who, about that same scenario going down, and I was like, I just don't know if that's a real possibility of it happening.
Okay. I feel like the vodka cranberry part would be better if it wasn't mentioned.
You're saying maybe he just didn't understand what the conversation was because he was drunk?
That, and he also sort of sounded sauce during this interview.
He did, but can we also point out that
he may have had a cold.
Vodka cranberry is just a objectively bad drink.
It is?
Yeah, I'm out.
All right, you're out on the report or just the drink itself?
The drink itself, and just I'm disinterested in the rest of what he has to say, just because who's drinking vodka cranberry?
Well, you don't have to be interested because you're already back down. He already backtracked on the report. The other thing he said, though, on WEI was that he's really hoping that Tom Brady goes back to the Patriots because that's best for the NFL, really?
I think for the sanctity of the NFL, for what Tom has been. If I'm Commissioner Goodell and I know, I'm trying to lean and craft ear like, guys, we can't let this happen. You got to keep Tom somehow in New England and let him finish his career because I just think it's best for the NFL.
We'll get into that as the hour moves along. We also have some Adam Schefter cuts. We'll play those later in the hour. On the way back, we'll check in on some NCAA bubble talk and bids discussion, and we do have the great Brett Okamoto from ESPN on UFC 247.
The Big 5 at 5, brought to you by Battle Born Injury Lawyers.
They've got time. A foul is just as good as a layup.
Fans come to their feet. Tillman out to Coleman. Coleman puts it up. Banks it in with 2/10 of a second.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Do Hender Tuckians get mad that Steve Quiz on ESPN said that Marvin Coleman was a Vegas native?
Well, listen, we've talked about this before. A very small area of Henderson is referred to by that name. So I don't think you can even refer to the whole.
Okay, all of Henderson. Is all of Henderson mad that he went to Foothill High School and then he's called a Las Vegas native? That said, you know what? I don't know if Marvin actually grew up in Vegas and then went over to Henderson.
Yeah, I don't either. Maybe he was. Maybe he did more research than we even know.
I bet you he didn't.
I agree with you.
But I will admit there's an opening there. This weekend was annoying again, and it's going to be annoying college basketball discussion for the next month or so. We're still doing this mid-major thing with the elite mid-majors are not that good, but 11 teams deserve to go from the Big Ten. It's just, it's stupid.
Right, but
it's just dumb. Listen to John Crispin, who played at UCLA and played at Penn State. He's a Northeast guy, but he has covered Mountain West Conference basketball in the past, and he's talking about Gonzaga and San Diego State as number one seeds.
Now, Gonzaga and San Diego State, those are the ones that I really struggle with. I think Gonzaga should be the one in the West. I just don't know if there's enough of a sample size for us to know that much about San Diego State yet.
But how do you not give them a one seed?
How is UCF not in the national championship game a couple years?
Is that comparable, UCF football and San Diego State basketball or Gonzaga basketball or Wichita basketball or Butler basketball?
Well, it's, I mean, totally different world with tournaments and everything else. But, I mean, it's comparable. Like, you'd say, like, okay, undefeated doesn't mean everything that you think it does.
Right.
So it's comparable in that regard. But
I will accept a discussion about number one seeds. That's fine.
Sure.
But what I've seen is while people are beating the drum for 10 or 11 or 12 teams, I mean, there's – who was it over the weekend? Our favorite, Seth Davis and Clark Kellogg, both had 11 Big Ten teams in the tournament. Like, stop.
Well,
it's a balanced conference without an outstanding team up top. And frankly, if you can't go 500 in the Big Ten, you're not in the tournament.
Right, but when you're making those predictions, you don't predict what it's going to be at the end of the year. You'd say what it would be right now if the season ended. And right. I think right now that would be the case. You've got those teams have profiles and computer numbers that are you know, astronomical.
And the problem with the numbers is that they build on themselves.
Sure.
When you keep playing teams, when you're all ranked in the top 70, and you keep playing top 70 teams, it doesn't give an opportunity for mid-majors to have any case.
Sure, they've got to build themselves up before conference play starts, and you have to also hope that other teams in your league do the same, and when they don't, it's there. Now, the argument about what San Diego State would do if they're in another conference. I think they'd be good in other. Let's just say they were in the Big Ten. I think they'd be fine. The argument.
Where would they finish? Where would they finish in the Big Ten?
Fifth or sixth, probably.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they'd be a top three team.
But also, well, if they were playing in the Big Ten and teams had to actually travel to California, it would give them a vent, like all, right. all those things.
So if you took that out,
right? And they, but they'd have a
I would be also. Fascinated to see, because the argument I've heard is the physicality of the Big Ten would hurt San Diego State.
I don't think it's that.
No, the four out, one in would hurt the rest of the Big Ten.
Sure.
Because they've so many of the rosters are built with this plotting style and no shooters.
But the other argument that you have, every team has off nights. So you have to take into consideration, sometimes when you have an off night, like your guys, Rutgers last night, they were terrible for most of the game. They were survived because they played the worst team in the conference.
Much better than San Diego State.
They were able to get through.
I'm kidding, by the way.
San Diego State played at home against San Jose State and needed a miracle shot at the buzzer to beat them. Any team you're playing in the Big Ten that night, that's a loss. So there's been nights where they've had off nights, been able to get through because they're playing inferior teams. You don't have that advantage when you're in a different league. So every team has off nights, and those off nights turn into losses in most leagues. San Diego State can get away with it in the Mountain West. So that's the difference. So they would lose some games. I think they'd finish, like I said, fifth or sixth, maybe fourth. I mean, they could compete for it, but I just think that's the difference of not being able to have an off night if you're in one of those leagues. Here you don't have to pay for it sometimes if you have an off night.
So everyone on the show is not riding San Diego State's jock. Okay.
Okay.
That is set. I'm a little more pro San Diego State, or a lot more, than you are. UFC 247 recap, and especially the scoring discrepancy, scoring controversy, judging issues. The great Brett Okamoto from ESPN.com and ESPN is on the way.
Hit up Cofield and Company on Facebook, like ESPN Las Vegas. Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Setting the mood, as we always do here on the show. Good times, Valentine's Day week, get on out here. Ethel M's out in Henderson. It's your spot. It's where you need to come out, pick up those last-minute gifts. In fact, you have a little time, so it's not even last minute at this point. Maybe Brett Okamoto has already taken care of that. We'll find out now. Brett Okamoto from ESPN, who's down in Houston for the fights we were just talking about a little bit ago with us here on the program. How you doing, sir?
Man, that was some serious intro music, man.
I was really feeling that,
whatever that was. Let's keep that going.
Yeah, that's good. We could play it underneath the whole time. That's solid. Are you ready for Valentine's Day?
Define ready. I'll cook Jess dinner like I do every single day, and that's about it. Yeah, I mean, we've been married now for like 7-8 years. Do I still need to do stuff? What should I be ready?
Maybe. And you can come down. You can come down here and join us. We'll help you out. Walk you through some good gifts to pick up.
If you're not just settling. Give me some advice. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's how it's gonna work. No, Steve. Brett thinks that we're not qualified to give him advice on what to get for Valentine's Day. He said he's just gonna cook dinner and that's it.
I don't even get that. What does that mean? I'm not qualified.
If I was going to ask for love advice, I mean, not to say like you guys would be at the bottom of the list, but I don't know if you'd be at the top. I mean,
I'd be at the top,
somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I'd be at the
somewhere
top.
In the middle. Okay.
Brett, I've had four relationships that lasted like more than 4 years. They all ended, but I mean, they lasted a long time. That's makes me an expert, right?
Steve just went lower on the list than he was before. Yeah. He
I just dropped down. That's unbelievable. Fair. The wit and wisdom of these ESPN. National guys.
Yeah, it's true.
All right. So can we get into the disaster? Was it a disaster? What do you think of the scoring in the main event?
I mean, it wasn't a disaster. Everybody always, you know, anytime there's a close fight, yep, they want to scream that it's a disaster. I mean, it happens every single time. I think in this case, what could qualify it as a disaster is that it's such a big fight. I mean, if you beat John Jones and the judges take it from you, even if it's very close and, we can kind of preface it with like, oh, it could have gone either way, that's a disaster, man, because it's like impossible to beat this guy. So if you beat him, you should be rewarded for it. And I do think that Dominic Reyes beat John Jones. So, I mean, it's close to a disaster, yeah.
So the general consensus was Reyes won 1 and 2, Jones won 4 and 5. The third round was the swing round that kind of decided things. But if I remember, I think you had Jones winning the second, didn't you, in live scoring?
I did. Yeah, I had John winning the second round. And I watched it back today. And And yeah, no, I thought Dominic won the second, and I felt pretty good about it. And then I had seen, you know, the same thing that you just said, that everyone was talking about the third round. I watched the third round again. I thought Dominic won it, man. I mean, I don't think I personally, after rewatching it, don't see a whole lot of controversy on third round. I don't know. Maybe it's one of those rounds I got to watch 100 times and I'll feel differently about it each time. But I got to say, live and then after one rewatch, I thought the third round was Dom.
My biggest issue coming out of that, well, there's a lot of issues to get to. The first one is the concept of you have to dominate the champion to beat him. Can you just address how dumb that is?
It is dumb, but I think that there is some truth to it in that, like, and how it plays out. I think if you are one of those guys sitting there octagon side and it's a close round, if it's a close round, you're like, man, you know, you're thinking which way are you going to lean? You are going to lean towards John Jones. So, like, this like argument that you have to do it or that you should have to do it is very dumb. But I think in practice it actually plays out that way, that you do have to go out there and really dominate the champion, because if it's close, it's just human nature, I think, for these guys who are judging these fights, that they're going to lean with the champion.
Well, sure. I think there's no question. There's so many points of reference in the judging criteria. None of them is tie goes to the champion or has to be one-sided in favor of the challenger. That's nowhere to be found, and I don't think we need to confuse him anymore, because part of what we saw on Saturday was not only the questionable scoring, but also the direct calling out of some of the judges in particular on the broadcast. Where did you kind of stand on, you know, Joe Rogan calling out a judge in particular for saying he's not even watching the fight? Earlier on in the card, people just pointing out certain judges weren't qualified at all to be in their job. Like, Texas is kind of a mess, and that just kind of became more of the story on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Texas is kind of a mess, but it is interesting. You know, two of the guys who were judging that title fight are, I mean, they have a lot of experience, you know, and I would actually say that they're both pretty good judges. I mean, you're always going to have certain scorecards that you don't agree with, but Marcos Rosales and Chris Lee, I mean, they've been doing this for a long time. Their names pop up everywhere. So, like, to just say, oh, it's the Texas Commission, like, you got to understand, like, they're not just using people who only live in Texas. A lot of these commissions, you know, they fly in people from California or you know, wherever, but they think are going to do a good job. I mean, the guy who got caught all the flack, and I think it was warranted, was that this Joe Salas guy, who I personally haven't heard of. I mean, I have no idea if he's a good guy, bad guy, if he's getting paid under the table or what, but I believe, and don't quote me on this because I didn't confirm it myself, but I saw somewhere that people were talking about that this was like the first title fight he had ever judged. And, you know, look, these guys got to get experience somehow, but UFC comes to town with John Jones, the greatest fighter of all time. You're going to have that guy do it, and not only going to have him do it, but you're going to be having him judging fights throughout the night. And this kind of opens a whole kind of can of worms. I could go down a rabbit hole with this, but you're going to have a guy, you know, judging fights all night. And then by the time the last fight rolls around, Adam and Steve, you both know this, like, you're kind of getting tired. And yeah, like, adrenaline kicks in and you want to watch the main event. But if you've been, like, focusing and sitting cage side and judging fights, I mean, you're just mentally fatigued at that point. So to have this guy who's never judged a high level UFC title fight judging a John Jones fight, And he's been at it all night. It's just setting it up for a disaster. And so it's like, these are things that are, like, avoidable, and these commissions should be avoiding them if they can.
Brett Okamoto, UFC 247, of course, Brett with ESPN and ESPN.com. You didn't mean what you were saying when you mentioned someone's being paid under the table, right?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't really mean it. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but you do look at a scorecard, of course, 49-46 going to John Jones. I mean, I just don't see any way that you could really justify that, but no, I don't think that it was more of a, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek comment, hopefully.
I was asking Adam earlier, so I want your answer on this one. Why does UFC keep going back to Texas, especially since Dana White is more than willing, after a fight card, to crap all over Texas? Stop going there.
I mean, money, man. Money talks. Houston has been a strong market for them. I mean, Houston definitely is a strong market for them. It traditionally has been. I don't have the numbers laying out here in front of me, but, you know, Dana, and of course, you know, Dana likes to do this in every market, but he was talking about on Wednesday that they, you know, they were on track and they were going to break their own record at Houston, and the gate was doing incredibly strong. It's a good place to go, you know. I mean, they have issues with the California Commission too. What California is doing with weight cutting, you know, they're canceling some fights. They're telling people they got to move up in weight. It's a headache. But it's headaches that they're willing to manage because, you know, the markets are strong and the cards do well there.
Has the increased testing, and we're talking John Jones' victory at UFC 247, narrow, unanimous decision, although one card had it 4-1. Has the increased testing around John Jones made him into a different fighter?
I mean, look, there's a correlation with it just in terms of when these things happened. I mean, is it a cause effect? I mean, that's up for debate. You know, I mean, you can say that, yes, John Jones tested positive for a banned substance, and since then he's been tested more, and since then you can look at his performances and say, hey, they haven't been quite as good. But you can also look at his performances and say maybe they haven't been as good because he's been doing this a long time, and maybe he's started to lack motivation, and he always has stayed with the same camp, so maybe he's not evolving anymore. You know, I was talking to a guy I really respect after the fight, and that was his take. The guy said, he's just not evolving anymore. I mean, I could tell you what John Jones is going to do. He's very good at what he does, but he's not really adding new wrinkles. And that's what he used to do, you know, in the early stages of his career. Maybe we're underestimating some of these guys. You know, maybe mm-hmm. John Jones flew through some of these older champions, and now he's facing younger guys like Thiago Santos and Dominic Reyes, and just because, you know, these guys don't have a long track record of holding titles, we're underestimating them. I mean, all of those are possible, but you know, it's a fair question that you bring up. I mean, the timeline does coincide with, you know, him getting tested more.
I think what you said at the end is very true, though, that this has been happening with every era and every champion in MMA. Younger fighters come along, they're training MMA from the get-go, they're well-rounded, they're smarter, they know how to, you know, game plan for fights, change the game plan. So Reyes is a guy who obviously has a big future at 205. I was looking at odds in offshore global odds on who's going to fight John Jones next. The favorite's actually Corey Anderson. There's some heavyweight fights in there that are longer shots. Doesn't it have to be a rematch against Reyes?
If he's healthy, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think he, you know, John actually mentioned to me after the fight that he thought that Reyes tore his ACL. I have no idea how he would know that. You know, maybe he felt something in there. Maybe he noticed something like a limp in Reyes during the fight. I have no idea, but he actually said that. Then I asked Reyes if that was true. He said he didn't think so. He's like, I don't know what gave him that impression, but I'm fine. I'm a little beat up. You know, my legs hurt. But I think if Reyes is healthy, I think there's going to be more and more momentum to do that rematch. Just because, I mean, like Anderson is fighting Jan Błachowicz this weekend. I mean, if something absolutely insane happens in that fight, then, you know, maybe they could steal some of the momentum. But I just think that momentum is high right now for a rematch, and I only think it's going to continue to build. I mean, the fan base does have a short memory, and they do move on very quickly from fight to fight. But as the conversation continues to come up of who is John Jones fighting next, I think the name Dominic Reyes is going to continue to come back, and the UFC knows that. And I think the UFC is going to look at this and say, you know, the media coverage of this, by the time a rematch comes around, this is going to be a big story that spills over to the mainstream in a big way, because there are going to be a lot of people saying that John Jones lost to this guy. And it's without a doubt going to be the most marketable fight for him.
Do you think John, in John's mind himself, this fight made him doubt a moving to heavyweight very soon?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I get the impression that John thought he won, and I really get a strong impression that he thinks if he fought Dominic, he would beat him worse. And he's not wrong necessarily to think that. You know, he brings up a good point that he does do very well in rematches. He is a high fight IQ guy. I mean, you hear that from every single coach you talk to about John Jones. Every single fighter, they say that when they watch him fight, it's very clear he has a high fight IQ. So I think he's confident. If they were to do a rematch, I think he'd be very confident taking it. And I think that he does look at those heavyweights. I don't think he's lying when he says, I look at Stipe Miocic and I think I'm way faster than him and I would beat him. So I think he's confident no matter where it goes.
Got about 30 seconds left, so real quick here. I really want to talk about Nico Montano, because I know you just broke a story about her a little bit ago, but I know most people don't care. So I will ask instead the question that people care about. When are we going to see Conor McGregor again?
Man, I think we're going to see him in attendance in Brooklyn. That's my guess. I think he will show up, or at least he'll make his presence known somehow, whether he's there in person or not. And then after that, I think it kind of depends. I think it kind of depends on what happens with Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson. But my guess right now is we won't see him until the fall.
Not fight week.
Yeah, it could certainly happen. I mean, it's Conor McGregor, and if he expresses any interest in fighting this summer, the UFC is going to jump on it, I would think, right? I mean, you want the guy to fight. But I'm getting the feeling it'll be fall. I mean, how many times do we talk about Conor McGregor's going to fight? Oh, he's going to fight, and then he doesn't fight. So I'm gonna go with history, and I'm gonna say it takes him to the fall to get back.
Brett, thank you, appreciate it.
No problem, guys. See ya.
Thanks, there you man. Go, Brett Okamoto, ESPN, ESPN.com. That Brooklyn fight will—that's at 155, right?
Yeah.
Khabib and,
yep.
and Tony Ferguson. Will Conor be walking around at like 165?
No, he'll be like, well, I mean,
no, you
he said
well,
he'll
you
step
were the
in.
One. You were the one who said. A month ago, well, he said it, that he's going to be there and he'll be ready to fight because he doesn't think one of those guys will get to the finish line and he'll have to fill in. So he can't show up at 185 pounds.
Yeah, but I don't believe he'll – I think he's thinking more if the fight gets called off like a month out.
Yeah.
He'll step in. I don't think he's going to go pull – you know, like we saw this weekend with James Krause when a fighter pulled out on Friday, the day before the fight. He's like, I'm not training, but I'll step in and fight. And he fought. Like, I don't think we'd see Conor do something like that. I think he's more waiting around to see if somebody pulls out a month out and then he would step in. I don't think he'll show up in Brooklyn ready to cut weight.
Get over here to Ethel M. Chocolates. I was just walking around the store looking for samples, right? Yeah. I saw the brittle, the cream liqueurs, the truffles, chocolate dip pretzel sticks, cupcakes, brownies, fudge. I like white chocolate. White chocolate candy bars as well. Candy bars. There's so much stuff. You can't even describe it all. But it's here in Henderson. We're going to close out in about 10 minutes. We got the grab bag on the way as a little more follow-up on Gail King. And her interview with Lisa Leslie, boy, 50 Cent brought it. It was pretty thought-provoking comments that he made over the weekend.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas. Cofield & Company presents...
Hey, hold on. Bag.
Grab bag.
Don't touch it. Don't even look at it.
Only on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, Dave.
So, Adam, you weren't on Friday. We talked about Gail King and Lisa Leslie and Kobe Bryant, and I have my opinions. You thought the clip was posted irresponsibly, made Gail King look bad?
I thought so. I mean, it was part of a much larger discussion and a much more nuanced and subtle discussion about the topic.
Right.
And CBS decided to tease it, which news organizations do. We deal with this in newspapers and radio and TV all the time. But, you know, they said, hey, here's an inflammatory clip. Let's post this and make it look like it was just this, you know, attack piece, which it wasn't. And then very few people reacted to the full piece. They just more reacted to the clip. And that's kind of how this all got set in motion.
50 Cent was on a red carpet. An AP reporter walks up to him and asks him about the whole issue. Because last week, Snoop Dogg also completely flipped out and was name-calling Gail King and Oprah, saying, you know, protect your own. Don't turn on guys like Michael Jackson and Bill Cosby. You keep doing this over and over again. Here's 50 Cent.
Now he's gone. Who can defend him at this point? It's all public opinion now. So it, no matter which way you look at it, I don't see what the goal is. I don't see how you can. Everyone's greater in their absence than they are in their presence, right? All right, so they're going to keep playing with people they're not here, and it's going to f them over. Because people are going to start to not like them in an intense way for doing that, because it's just not the right thing to do.
All right.
It's a very nuanced discussion to have about Kobe, because it was one incident. It was an accuser that faced public pressure and had to back out of testifying. That's a very tricky subject, because one of the things 50 Cent also said was the legal system dealt with it and found him not guilty. Not true, but that makes a little sense, and that makes it more nuanced discussion. Other people are turning this, and he actually mentioned Michael Jackson there and Bill Cosby. Those aren't nuanced discussions. That's what their legacy is. They did awful, awful things. So this is it's different to loop them in. With the Kobe situation, I get where some people are upset with it, but you also have to keep in mind it's very possible that he raped a woman that is still alive that has to sit here and listen every day to how amazing he was. And I talked about it. His death hit me hard. I cried like 6 days in a row. I get it. It sucked. It was tough to deal with. But part of his legacy is that. To discuss it is not completely unfair. And when you loop, when you start looping in Bill Cosby, who did horrible, horrible things, and Michael Jackson, same thing, that diminishes Kobe's legacy now. Don't lump them in together. That's insane.
We are closing out the show here at Ethel M. Chocolates. You want to come down here sometime during the week. Don't blow it, guys. You got Valentine's Day coming up on Friday. Another cool thing, man, coming to this tasting room, book in the tasting room. They've got tasting with wine. Now they're introducing tasting with beer as well. This place is spectacular, right at the end of Sunset and Mountain Vista there as Sunset turns down towards Sunset Station. We will see you tomorrow as Mike Pritchard will be in as the company.